Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. I'd like to call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. May we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
Commissioner Montes?
Here.
And Commissioner Sage?
Here.
Please stand for the flag salute.
Please follow along. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a light agenda here tonight, but we do need to review. Is there anybody who would like to make any changes or revisions to the agenda as it's written?
No.
Thank you.
Seeing none, we'll just proceed. This point in the meeting is an opportunity for the community to make public comments, excuse me, on items that are not on the agenda. The comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission, and the Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We also request that any public comment be limited to 3 minutes and accompanied by the voluntary submittal slip that is available in the lobby. Is there anyone here in the audience tonight that would like to come and speak on an item that is not on the agenda? Seeing no one there, I will close the public comment period for the beginning of this meeting. And any other written communications that need to be added to our packet?
None this evening.
Very good. Thank you. Our next item is the consent agenda. This is just the consideration of the approval of the minutes from the April 2nd meeting. I'm hoping that my fellow commissioners have had a chance to review those minutes. And I will take a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion or any changes anybody needs to make on these?
No.
Thank you.
Seeing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. Thank you very much. The next item tonight is the single public hearing item. It's a consideration of a lot merger 18001 and a conditional use permit 18007. It's a phased development of 9 two-story apartment units and the construction of a new two-story mixed-use structure, including a 2,000-square-foot commercial space and a 2,300-square-foot apartment at 1214 East Grand and at 181 North Elm Street. The applicant is Floyd Hinesley, and representatives are Cody McLaughlin and Fred Porter. And Ms. Maravilla?
Yes, I need to recuse myself from this decision as I live too close to the project.
Very good. Thank you very much. As Commissioner Maravilla leaves, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. Downing, or to your skilled assistant here to make the staff presentation.
Certainly. So I'll make a brief introduction. Thank you, Chair Martin, members of the Commission. Matt Downing, your planning manager. This evening's staff presentation will be given by Assistant Planner Andrew Perez.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. The application before you tonight is a consideration of lot merger 18-001 and conditional use permit 18-007 at 1214 East Grand Avenue and 181 North Elm Street. The project site consists of two parcels. It's 21,700-square-foot parcel at 1214 East Grand Avenue and 181 North Elm Street. The parcel is 17,550 square feet in size. Both parcels are zoned gateway mixed use, and existing development on the site consists of a 372-square-foot commercial building at the East Grand Avenue frontage and a 1,750-square-foot single-family dwelling on the North Elm parcel. Surrounding land uses include commercial and offices to the west, a fast food restaurant to the south and east of the project site, and a mixture of single and multifamily residential to the north. So the applicant is proposing to merge the two parcels and phase the development over two different phases. The first phase will consist of 9 three-bedroom apartments, guest parking, and landscaping, whereas the second phase of the project will include a mixed-use building with commercial space on the ground floor and a three-bedroom apartment above, and a guest a parking area behind that will be shared by both uses. Here's a more simplistic site plan for you to easily see what's proposed. To the north of the site in phase one, the 9 apartments will be provided in 2 different structures. The southernmost structure will consist of 6 apartment units, whereas a smaller structure to the northwest will include 3 apartment units. This shows the existing single-family residence that will remain and the guest parking area along the western property line. Phase 2 of the proposal is here to the south, includes the mixed-use structure and the shared parking area. The general plan land use designation for the project site is mixed use, and the proposed project is consistent with that designation. It helps achieve an objective of the land use element and helps implement policies of the land use, economic development, and housing elements. As I previously mentioned, the project site is zoned gateway mixed use, and the main intent of the of this zone is to provide a combination of office and commercial uses, along with multifamily residential and retail and other pedestrian-oriented uses on ground floors of those structures facing East Grand Avenue. This zone also encourages residential and office uses above on upper floors. This proposal is proposing exactly that and meets all development standards for the gateway mixed-use zone. So go into a little more detail about each phase here. It's a site plan of just phase one by itself. As I mentioned, it's 9 two-story, three-bedroom apartments. Each apartment will be 1,355 square feet. Each apartment will have its own 510-square-foot garage and 64-square-foot deck. The existing driveway off of North Elm Street will be widened to meet code requirements. It will be improved with an ADA-compliant sidewalk at the back of the approach, and this driveway will provide access to each of the private garages, the guest parking area, and will provide emergency access for the site. So this is the typical floor plan you'll find for each of the apartment units. The ground floor will include the two-car garage and master suite, and above on the second floor, 2 additional bedrooms, bathroom, and living space, kitchen, and the outdoor deck. Phase two, the two-story structure will feature 2,025 square feet of commercial on the ground floor with a 2,321 square foot three-bedroom apartment above. Here also, the curb cut will be widened to accommodate traffic, emergency access, and that will lead to the 9 uncovered parking spaces that will be shared by each of the uses. And going back one slide, or a couple slides, phase one is proposed to be have ground broken in late 2019 and have construction lasting about a year. And skipping ahead to phase two, the applicant is proposing to break ground late 2021, and this construction period is also estimated to last about a year. The floor plan for phase two, the ground floor is a commercial shell, essentially. Any future improvements will be handled by a tenant when that is leased. And then going up to the second floor, you'll see the three-bedroom apartment, living area, and 232 square foot deck. So into parking. The table breaks down the parking by phases because that's how the project's being proposed to be developed. So with phase one, you have the 9 apartment units and existing single family residence. Two spaces are required for each residential unit, and one half space is required of each unit for guest parking. That comes to a total of 25 spaces required, and the applicant will be providing 25 spaces for phase one. Phase two, the parking requirement is 10 spaces, two for the residential unit and one space for every 250 square feet of gross commercial floor area. The applicant is providing 9 parking spaces for this phase, which does not meet the code requirement. So looking at the entire project, 35 spaces are required and 34 are being provided, which is a 3% deficit. However, the municipal code allows a 20% reduction in the number of parking spaces for shared uses. So when you apply this shared parking reduction, the parking requirement is lowered to 28 spaces, which through the 34 spaces is compliant with the municipal code. So residential density for mixed-use projects is calculated a little differently than you would for a traditional single-family residential development. In mixed-use projects, each unit is assigned a density equivalent based on the number of bedrooms in the unit, and this project being comprised of the single existing two-bedroom single-family dwelling and 10 three-bedroom apartments, the chart outlines the density equivalency. So, as I mentioned, the two-bedroom is equal to one density equivalent unit, whereas the three bedrooms are equal to 1.5 density equivalent units. And you do the math, and it comes out to 16 density equivalent units for the entire project on a site that can accommodate up to 22.5 density equivalent units. A preliminary traffic analysis was performed and submitted by the applicant. The project, or the analysis, showed that the project is anticipated to generate 11 peak hour trips during the AM time period and 15 trips during the peak PM time period. And the city's traffic study policy threshold for additional analysis is 20 trips in any given peak hour period. That was not triggered, therefore no additional analysis was required nor submitted by the applicant. Moving on to the physical structures themselves. Phase one, the two residential structures, feature elements commonly found in both Craftsman and Mediterranean style buildings. Craftsman features include low-pitched roofs and exposed rafter tails, while stucco walls and concrete tiles for roofing is common in Mediterranean style architecture. You can see here north and south elevations of those two buildings. The main wall color is white with some beige trim. Any exposed beams and fascia boards will be stained a dark walnut, and awnings and window trim will be painted a dark blue color. Moving on to phase two of the architecture, it's a much more contemporary style building. Features a variety of materials and textures, from the smooth stucco walls to the reclaimed wood, rain screen, and aluminum on the windows and doors. So the south elevation is what you'll be seeing from East Grand Avenue. You can see the area kind of to the right is the area of the deck for the residential portion, which helps delineate the two levels and will provide that outdoor living space for the residents. I'd like to note that the Architectural Review Committee was especially complimentary of the contrasting architectural styles between the two phases and thought it added some aesthetic appeal and interest to the project and project site. So both the Staff Advisory Committee and Architectural Review Committee reviewed this project earlier this year. The Staff Advisory Committee discuss stormwater requirements, proposed utility connections and locations, and the proposed phasing. Staff was comfortable and supportive of the project as submitted and recommended approval to this commission. The Architectural Review Committee reviewed the project in February, discussed site access, both pedestrian and vehicular, discussed the architectural character, and had comments and revisions to the landscaping, but overall was very supportive and recommended approval as well. Staff reviewed the project for compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act and found that the project was determined to be categorically exempt from further environmental review as an infill development project. Public notification. Notice of the public hearing was mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the project site. Notice was published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall, on the city's website, and the sign was posted at the project site 2 weeks ago. Additionally, tonight's agenda and staff report were posted at City Hall and on the city's website in accordance with government code. Staff has received three inquiries from a public comment. The first from a property owner on Priscilla Lane, who had questions about the fencing between the northern boundary of the proposed project and her property. And staff clarified with the applicant that a fence will be added to maintain privacy and to prevent trespass between the two projects or two sites. Two property owners on North Elm Street expressed concern about the project further reducing the availability of street parking on North Elm Street. It was expressed that it's a already impacted area. However, staff has confirmed that the project meets parking requirements. A condition of approval has been established to maintain the garages for parking, and we hope that that will alleviate that concern. Therefore, in conclusion, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution approving lot merger 18-001 and conditional use permit 18-007. And I'd be happy to answer any questions should the committee have any.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Before I have the applicant come up, are there any questions for staff? Mr. Sage?
Yes, I do. I have a couple of questions. Could you go back to the a parking slide? Now, I guess I need to understand something about combining these in order to come up with the 35 spaces and then using the mixed-use reduction. From my view of the drawings and the map, it appeared there's a block wall straight across between phase one and phase two, which would then prevent any type of multiple use of some of these spaces. So how do we include those numbers in the total mixed-use reduction if, in fact, there's no access?
Commissioner Sage, that is a good point. We evaluate the whole site just because that's generally what we would do. But even looking at phase two by itself, the 9 parking spaces provided versus the 10 that are required is a 10% deficit, which still meets that threshold of less than 20%. Therefore, okay, you can still make the finding that it meets code requirements.
Actually, that's why I did the numbers, and that's what I came up with, and I was a little unclear as to, well, why is it being presented as a combined when it really is functionally isn't combined, but each stands alone and meets the same requirement.
Yeah, that's correct. And while it's not expected that guests of the Phase 1 units will use Phase 2 parking, they aren't restricted from doing so, and if they want to make that walk around the corner, then that is a possibility.
Put a doorway in the hall, in that wall.
It's a little tunnel.
And then the other one is, other question I have is on the traffic. As far as the trip generation during peak hours, AM and PM peak hours, did that study take into account that we have a business, which is an office, that's going to be generating traffic outside of the peak hours, significantly outside the peak hours normally. So is there any adjustments needed for that?
Commissioner Sage, the way traffic trips generation is calculated using the ITE manual, and each land use has its own chip generation factor.
Mm-hmm.
So general office is kind of its own,
right,
own factor. So, you know, it's hard to anticipate which kind of business will move in, but that captures most uses that we would anticipate being in there, and okay, and factors that into the analysis.
Okay, so it is factored in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Ms. Montez.
Yes, I have a question for staff. Regarding the land use element policy, LU 11-2, require that new development should be designed to create pleasing transitions to surrounding development. I love the design of the development and the commercial building. However, it looks like it stands out when it's placed in between Jack in the Box and the building on the other side of it. And I was just wondering what kind of comments, if any, from the Architectural Review Committee were made regarding the difference in architecture between the existing buildings and the proposed building.
Commissioner Montez, the Architectural Review Committee didn't discuss too much about the relationship to the land uses to the east and west in terms of design and style. They were very complimentary of the project as it was proposed. I know the applicant did inquire with the property owner to the west in hopes of expanding that project and making more of an impact, mm-hmm, on that East Grand Avenue frontage, but was unable to come to any kind of deal. But
okay, all right, thank you. That's it.
Very good. I do have a few questions. And this may be better for the applicant, but I'm going to direct it to staff at this point. When you look at this development, there's a call to merge these two lots. And when I look at the phasing of these two, it looks like an ideal opportunity for phase two to be separated legally into its own parcel. Has that been presented as an option for separating these into, you know, two lots, two future lots?
That has not been discussed, and I'd have to double check on the square footage of phase two by itself to see if it would qualify as a legal lot in the Gateway mixed use zone.
So that may be the net size of it may be too small for it to qualify as a separated individual lot?
Potentially.
Very good. Thank you. I had some similar parking concerns because it looks like there's two projects, two parking lots. But part of the concern that I have in our notes here under the analysis on page three, in the middle of page three, it says a condition of approval has been developed that requires the applicant to construct the second floor apartment in a way that allows for adaptive reuse as commercial space. And so I'd like to get a little more information on some of the background on that conversation and the need for that particular condition. And if, in fact, we're going to add 2,000 more square feet of commercial space, suddenly those 9 or 10 parking spaces down there are not going to be adequate.
Commissioner Martin, staff had those discussions internally, just looking at the size of that apartment. It is a pretty large space, and you can envision a time where that might be difficult to find a rental, depending on the price of the unit. It is a market rate unit, so 2,300 square feet at the market rate can be quite expensive. So we just wanted the physical structure to be built in a way that would allow for reuse, and then should that happen, we can reevaluate uses and parking requirements to make sure it complies with code requirements.
Okay, very good. And to that note, the drawing that we have on the front page, it says the floor area of Unit 1 for the conditioned space, which I'm assuming is the second-story residential, says 1,866 with a 232-square-foot deck, and the floor area of the commercial at 1,482. And what we heard earlier this evening for the commercial was something above 2,000, which is a fairly significant change. And even the floor area for the residential, you just quoted 23, and that number kind of jumps out at me as well. Did that 2,300, does that include the deck? Or I guess I'm a little confused. Now, here again, on a piece of paper, nothing's been drawn yet, so the building can certainly change between what's proposed tonight and what gets approved and what gets built at some point in time. But given the size of the project and the size of the parcel, I'm cautious about approving something that's larger than the parcel should be truly expected to accommodate.
Yeah, understandable, Chair Martin. So the stats on the cover sheet of the plan set may just be an inconsistency or an oversight by the applicant. Staff did scale out the drawings. I think that mixed-use structure has a footprint of about 50 by 50, so 2,500 square feet. And then taking those measurements with the gross floor area, the 2,300 square foot apartment and 2,000 square feet of commercial are accurate.
But some of that may include that the stairwell, is what you're saying?
Correct.
From the,
yeah.
And I'm happy to get clarification from the applicant when they make their presentation. But
yeah, but gross floor area does include stairwells, mechanical rooms, et cetera.
Right. And the other question I have as well, it has to do with that west side view. If we can go to that elevation for that phase two building. There we go. That west elevation looks fairly monolithic to me, given how close it is to the street and how close it is to that property line on the west side. I want to give some consideration and encourage my fellow commissioners to think about a little bit as we evaluate this project, looking at some alternatives to kind of soften that look. It would be nice if we had a picture of what the existing structure on the west side looks like. I give the applicant an opportunity to address this as well. But we approved a project a couple years ago, a residential project that was a large, about 24-foot tall side of a garage and was right on the property line. You drive by that property today and there's a big, huge wall right on the property line. And I look at that west elevation and that looks like a big, huge wall right on the property line. And I too like the architecture. I think that there's an awful lot of opportunity, but I look at that big west elevation and there's not much effort in my mind at this point in softening that appearance, and we may want to have a little bit of conversation about that as we evaluate this project tonight.
Yeah, Chair Martin, that's definitely within your purview as a commission. I'll let the applicant maybe speak a little more to it, but staff assumes that given the proximity to the property line, certain building codes are triggered in terms of openings and such. So that may be a factor, but I'll let the applicant expound on that.
And to keep me from running over to this big piece of paper sitting next to me, about how far away from the property line is that sidewall?
I think it's right about a foot.
Just so it's fairly close,
yeah,
to sitting on that property line at that
correct
point. Okay, very good. Thank you. Those are the questions I have for staff. I'm going to invite the applicant to come up and make a few comments. And be prepared to answer questions as any may come up.
I'm Cody McLaughlin, the project architect, and these are both co-owners of the project, Floyd Hinesley and Fred Porter, who is also the civil engineer. So if you have any civil engineering questions, he can answer those.
Very good.
So I'm just here to answer any architectural questions you may have. It sounds like you do have some. So to address one of them, yes, it's really close to the property line, so that needs to be a one-hour firewall.
Right.
So we can't have any openings. We have to be 5 feet away from the property line to have any kind of openings. I have softened facades like this with, you know, trellis-type vegetation, which we could do temporarily. But you made a good point. There's a building right next to it that's not showing that would screen a lot of that elevation. But yeah, it's so monolithic because of the fire requirement.
Correct, yeah, and I understand that. I'm just even wondering, even if it was a faux window application, rather than expecting some trellising of ivy or something to grow up, particularly on that second floor, but creating even just an architectural feature that looks like a window, certainly a solid wall that may have contrasting colors or modest dimension to it. Even if you want to bring in some of the wood siding and do but I'm just thinking something visually or architecturally that could be added just to break up this gray wall and dark gray wall that sits there.
And you can see I set the lower floor in about 6 inches, so you get a little bit of a shadow line between the first and second floor. But in the past, I've also done what are reglets. Have you ever heard of the metal?
Yes.
Aluminum reglets. Use those to help break up the facade as well.
Okay.
So I'll take that. And I'm open to any suggestions.
Right. Well, I'm sure we'll have some discussion around it, and we'll see how that unfolds.
Okay.
Ms. Montes, do you have questions for the applicant that you'd like to share at this time?
Yes, I have a question regarding the cutout on the west elevation drawing. I understand this is just, it's a rendering, but that cutout, I'm assuming that it will be the appropriate height so somebody wouldn't be able to fall right out of that?
No, there's no deck at that point.
Oh, okay.
So there's no access to that area.
Okay.
Beyond that is just an awning for the commercial. So like a flat roof.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Yeah.
That's it for me. Thanks.
Commissioner Sage, do you have questions for the applicant?
I do not. Thank you.
I do.
Okay.
Not very many. But do you have a square footage measurement for the finished apartment in phase two?
I believe what's on the cover is correct as far as the square footage of just the apartment.
Okay.
Not
the stairwell.
The circulation, yeah. Typically, only the lower stairwell is square footage, and then you don't count the upper. So the number on the cover should be just the square footage of the unit.
Okay.
Not the deck or.
And so the floor for the commercial, this 1482, really is a net square footage of the, I'm going to say, leasable commercial space. And it's 2,000 square foot plus or minus number that's been thrown around.
Includes
the foyer. And on that foyer door on the left side, are there code requirements that remain unlocked during business hours? Because is that a secondary access to that retail space? It's just a little bit unusual to me that if I'm renting that apartment upstairs, I mean, part of it is really nice. I've got this double door and this little interior foyer that's downstairs. And so I'm going to be, accessing my apartment by traveling up the stairs on a landing, and that's obviously the locked door to my apartment. But can that remain locked during the day, or are there code requirements around that?
Yeah, that can remain locked during the day. Only the commercial would probably have
the double door when the commercial services would be unlocked during the regular commercial.
Yeah, and the commercial would require an exit sign, whereas the residential wouldn't. So
I'm just kind of curious as we look at that. The other, it's a curiosity as well.
The intent was to blend the residential with the commercial.
Correct.
So instead of doing like a residential front door, single door, we want it to look like the commercial.
And you've done a nice job on that, I believe. Although the concern I have here, again, if I'm renting that and apartment, I'm going to be parking behind the building, and then I'm going to be walking around the entire building and then up the stairs, and then I've got that little hallway, that's at the top of the stairs, and I'm coming back into the body of my apartment. Because the only entrance is in the upper left corner right there by the laundry room. That's the entrance to the apartment.
Correct.
That's a long trek from my car with a bag of groceries.
Yeah, it's a bit of a trek. Well, it's a bit of a trek back to the trash cans as well. Are in the back. But I think that's the best location as far as screening the trash. And back to the front door to the residential, one of those doors could be a fixed door. It doesn't have to be a double door.
Right. And here, this is an art. This is a concept drawing.
Yeah.
Obviously, what may end up being actually built, hopefully, is fairly close to this, but doesn't have to match this, exactly. Obviously, but functionally it needs
to... It'll be real close.
Functionally, it needs to be in compliance with all the conditions that we placed on here. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the residential complex in Phase 1, the biggest issue that I really have, we're in such desperate need of apartment-style housing that I'm excited about this project. Mm-hmm. But I look at this, and with three-bedroom units in here universally, my expectation is the majority of these are going to be filled with people with children. And there is, I don't see any kind of play area, any kind of off-street recreation area of any kind. Mm-hmm. And we just had another development recently that happened to be directly across street from an elementary school that would provide some of that, meet some of that need. But I'm curious to know, and maybe being part of the marketing plans, you know, how do you plan to address that, or you know, the lack of this as far as making these, you know, available to families?
Yeah, I'm not sure what is there an open space common area requirement in this situation?
There is an open space requirement in for mixed use projects. This project does comply with it. However, that standard in the municipal code is pretty lax, and it's not well defined. So basically any open space that's not a footprint of the building or accessible to vehicles can be counted towards that open space. So it doesn't necessarily have to be dedicated to traditional recreation space.
Right.
And Chair Martin, if I may provide some insight on that.
Sure.
As well. And part of the justification for that is the fact that this is a property that's zoned mixed use. And so while there is a need for outdoor recreation space for residents in any project, where is that balance in a commercial district of providing, you know, taking up your commercial land area with recreation space? So that's why the standard is rather relaxed and does allow for a pretty liberal application of that standard.
Very good. Thank you very much.
There might be an opportunity for some recreation space in that northwest corner where there's sort of a basin area. It's landscaped.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk to the owners about that.
Right. I'm not sure how hilly. I mean, you know, that.
Right.
And I'm not expecting something significant, but mm-hmm. I just, you know, you have 9 three-bedroom units mm-hmm. plus a tenth in the front. The one in the front has even less opportunity than the others, but that faces on the Grand Avenue. Right. And I think that anybody that's coming in to rent that kind of residential unit certainly is going to have the expectation of that specific location. I mean, ideally, whoever rents the ground floor commercial may want to live above their unit. What mm-hmm. an ideal opportunity for someone to do exactly that. But when I'm looking at these 9 units above, that's 27 bedrooms. And I get 27 bedrooms. And I'm thinking there's going to be more than a handful of school-aged children that are going to end up, you know, living in here.
Right.
And
they will be heading to one of the various parks, I imagine.
And I'm sure they will. But I just it'd be, you know, I'm just wondering what kind of consideration, you know, was thought about, or I would encourage you to consider including whatever modest space you possibly can into that. For that use as an opportunity for the tenants, and this may be more for the owner than for you as the architect. That mm-hmm. the existing residence that is there, is that currently occupied by one of the owners? Or is that currently used as a rental?
It's unoccupied.
It's currently unoccupied. Yeah. Is your expectation then to use that as a rental?
Yes.
Okay. And it's currently unoccupied. Interesting. Okay. Good. I think those are the questions that I have. I will ask you this question, and I think it's been answered by staff to some extent, but is it safe to assume that there is not a plan or an expectation of the owner to split this Phase 2 parcel off and attempt to sell it as a separate legal parcel?
I don't think it meets the size requirement.
Right. And I think that's where, that's what I'm saying. I think it was answered mm-hmm. by staff that you can't do that.
Right.
But I just want to confirm that we're not opening a can of worms that in the future of some time. That I think those are the questions that I have for you. If there are no more questions for the applicant, we're going to allow you to sit down. At this point, I'm going to open the meeting to a public comment on this item. If you have, I don't have any speaking slips. The crowd is fairly small. But please introduce yourself as you come up to the microphone, and you're given 3 minutes to give us your opinion and thoughts and comments on the project. So is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this project?
How you doing?
You do need to come to the microphone so we can hear you.
Everybody can hear me?
Everybody at home, who the crowd that is watching from home can also hear you. Thank you very much.
I apologize for no tie. we live at, me and my mother, this is my mother. But
and your name is? I'm sorry.
My name is Alan Shirley.
Thank you.
And we live at 220, which is just up, just a little bit above the proposed site.
Okay.
I had a couple questions, if I could, on the... on the analysis that was done on the traffic, was that analysis done during school hours? I mean, because it's Oakview School is right above us, and the traffic is pretty horrendous in the mornings and the afternoons, late afternoons. It gets pretty busy because they use our, you know, Elm Street as the pickup and drop off time, which, you know, like I said, it's even today when we go to pull in our parking lot, you know, we have to wait considerable amount of time, and then, you know, we're going to be, of course, adding more units to that, that analysis. And in the parking, I'm sure he mentioned that we already had some people complain about parking. It is horrendous. We already have, you know, I think it's a 20-unit apartment right directly across the street that's overloaded. But the biggest problem we have is actually the car wash. And nothing against the car wash, but all their employees, you know, early morning, they, you know, they take up every bit of the street parking there is. I mean, it's non-existent. Even the trash, people have problems picking up the trash. On trash days, you know, you have to pull all the way out to the street because of the parking. And I was looking at the way the garages were set up. They look a little inconvenient for the actual tenant, which we all know is, I know there was an analysis done on how many parking spaces per unit, but in reality, we all know that most of those garages are used for the boat or the RV or, you know, and not used for parking, which, like I said, is already a big concern right there on Elm Street. It's been horrendous, to say the least. What else was there? Oh, yeah, the school. And our view. This is kind of a personal one, but my parents, for years, have taken some time to buy a house that they had an ocean view. Now, we don't have the greatest ocean view, but we have a minuscule one. And phase two on that is going to be consuming a little bit of our ocean view. It looks right down when we're sitting. Matter of fact, I did it this evening. I just sat there and I looked where that the second page, the back phase, and is going to take up part of that that little bit of that view. And to the architect, it is a beautiful building. I'll say it is, but the top of the roof probably wouldn't be real great to look at, or for the resale value of my parents, you know, if they ever did, you know, at least they can say now that they have ocean view and consume a lot of it. But those are my concerns. I don't know.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Perez, do you want to make a very brief comment about the traffic question?
Chair Martin, I'd love to. So the traffic analysis for that purpose is peak AM time period from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Peak PM period is from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And it looks at what will be generated by this development only. It doesn't really take into consideration existing conditions. So it essentially just looks at what impact this will have on adjacent intersections and roads in, you know, by itself.
And in so many words, what ended up happening, because the calculated load of this project is below the minimum standards that requires any kind of study, there was no formal traffic study done. So when you hear about traffic or traffic study and traffic numbers, they looked at what kind of traffic impacts is this project going to bring to, you know, the neighborhood. But it doesn't because this project in and of itself is small enough, those impacts were modest enough that there was no real traffic analysis done at this point. Is school traffic an issue along that street? I'm sure that it is. And is there going to be an impact on this between, in my mind, probably more between this project and Grand Avenue than going up the hill? But by code and ordinance, there was not enough of traffic to warrant doing a special study. So there was none done on this particular project. Okay, anybody else like to speak to the project? Yes.
My name's Colin. I live on Grand as well, and parking is really going to be a bummer when these go in, because as most people know, what happens to a garage? It ceases to be a garage. It becomes a storage area. So then where are they going to park? They're probably going to start parking on Elm Street, and it is an issue. It really is an issue. If they could provide maybe more guest parking, 5 guest parking areas, doesn't sound like very much at all. You figure you're going to have at least 2 cars per apartment. And if you have multiple families living in those apartments, you're going to have more than 2 cars. I don't know when they rent out these apartments, they're going to how well they will scrutinize how many people are living in these apartments, because you could have more than just one family living in them. So, like I said, the main problem is going to be the parking on Elm Street. And it is an issue, believe me.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak on this issue here tonight? Seeing no one else, I'm going to close the public comment period, return the conversation to the commission. Has this elicited any additional questions for staff? And you're welcome to ask them now. If not, you're welcome to make any kind of comments or suggestions on this project. Commissioner Sage?
Thank you. Actually, I do have a question of staff. What is the current level of service, the traffic at that intersection of Grand and Elm? Do we know?
I do believe it's LSC at Grand and Elm.
I think it is C. And so that would be considered an acceptable level, and then this particular project is not adding any significant change to that, so it would remain with expectations that it would remain a level C. Okay. I think I did read something in the package about the uses of the garage and the garages, and that there was some condition applied that the renters are required to utilize their garages for parking and not for storage. And if that's the case, how would that be managed to ensure that happens?
We could write it into the rental contract.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, you're not allowed to make it. That's okay.
My name is Floyd Hinesley, and I'm one of the developers, or the developer of the project.
Okay.
And those, if you notice, sir, Mr. Sage, that those are oversized garages. So there's some contention there, contingency there for storage.
Right.
And also, in addition to the oversized garage, we'll have a large driveway out front. So if they do have somebody there as a guest or otherwise, there will be on-site parking within the driveway. So as far as our adding much to the level of service there, probably shouldn't be the case.
Okay. So, but that is something that could be, as far as use of the garage for parking, could be written into the rental agreements?
Yes, that they can't, that they must have space for 2 cars in a covered parking space. Can be written into a contract.
Okay. Because that seems to be one of the key issues, and that might help alleviate one of the parking, or at least partially the parking concern, to make sure that it's used appropriately, and we reduce the impact on street parking. Okay. I think, let me just quickly check my notes. Okay, we've addressed the issue about the traffic flow, and I agree. I used to take my grandkids to Ocean View, and I fully agree with that traffic nightmare during the, I did the pickup times. My wife had to do the drop-off times. I don't get up that early. So, but I agree that, and that's, unfortunately, I think that will always continue to be a problem. It's the schools there, and that's one of the quickest way to get your kids to the school. And I don't see any way to alleviate that part of the traffic issue. I guess my concern would be just as equally along the Main Street direction with the business. Of course, that's going to depend on the type of business that is there and how frequently their clientele come and go. So, and without really having any information as to who would be there and what kind of business they would run, I don't see anything else we can do to mitigate something that we have no level for. And let's see, I think you answered my question previously about why it would be desire to merge the lots instead of doing them separately, and I think I understand that. So, maybe one other quick thing. 5.7. Nope, that's it. Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, I have a follow-up question for you, sir, regarding the garages.
Yes.
So, certainly, writing into the contract that they must park in the garages is a step in the right direction. Do you intend on having a property management company enforce that rule?
Probably so. We intend to engage a property management company to manage the entire facility there. So that would be part of their inspection duties, is on a random basis to go out and inspect that two cars can indeed fit in that garage.
Okay, and I live in a condominium complex, two-car garage, but it's not large enough for my husband's pickup truck. Would this be a similar case for your garages? I mean, two smaller cars could fit in my garage, but not a pickup truck in my car.
Could we have staff introduce the... there it is. What's the size of the garage there, Mr. Perez? The number of square feet?
The square footage is 510 square feet. I can look up the exact dimensions, Mr. Montes.
That's fine, because typically a garage is 20 by 20, which is 400 square feet, and maybe that's what you have. So we placed a contingency in there that would allow about 110 feet of storage and still accommodate two automobiles.
Okay.
And your pickup should fit in that one, I think.
Thank you.
Height is sometimes an issue too with the, you know, these roll-up doors. You get a, I don't know, you know, if it's a lifted pickup truck, obviously that's a non-standard vehicle. But I would hope that a standard full-size pickup truck, from the visual that we have, I believe that it does certainly comply. But we do have constructed, we have residential complexes in the community that have a two-car garage that do not fit a standard size pickup truck. So that's what's raising the issue here today.
Yeah, we were very cautious in designing these buildings that we could make it as comfortable as possible for the people renting those, but also as comfortable as possible for the public. You know, the level of service, and I would probably, because this question I recall came up from one of the speakers there, about the school, probably our high level of service, the peak level of service occurs between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. and I would think that the students would be long gone, to use that term, and leaving the school. So that would be a help to the traffic in that area as well.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair Martin, if I may jump in real quick. If it pleases the commission, staff was looking through the resolution and the standard condition that we have requiring the garages to be kept clear and utilized for parking by the residents does not appear to be in the resolution. So if that is something, I do have language if the commission would like to add that in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Any other comments at this point? Or?
No.
I'm going to make a few comments and introduce conditions, and then I'm going to make a motion on this. Well, I'll start the other way around. I'd like to move that we approve. Get to my notes, make sure I'm approving the right thing here. I'd like to move that the Planning Commission approve a resolution of the City of Aurora Grande approving the lot merger 18001 and the conditional use permit 18007 located at 1214 East Grand Avenue and at 181 North Elm Street applied for by Floyd Hinesley. I do have three specific conditions that I would like to see included as part of this approval. The first one, confirming that a perimeter fence on the north side of the project. I see in the drawings it talks about a retaining wall, but I want to make sure that there is a, and I think these have been agreed to by the developer. I don't anticipate this being any kind of a problem, but perimeter fence on the north side of that project. I would like to see architectural features on the west side to soften the look of that. I'm happy to leave this as a general recommendation and leave it to the wisdom of the architect and the approval of the owner to what that ends up looking like. And I'm happy to allow staff to be the appropriate party to review and approve, you know, that softening feature. But I would like the architect to work on features of some kind along that side wall in order to, you know, to soften them, what I believe to be is a monolithic wall. And I would like to see wording added into the conditions that the garages are left open and available for vehicle parking. And I realize it, as an aside, it gets tough to enforce. And like most things in our community, enforcement is typically dealt with as a result of a complaint of some kind from the community. It'll be interesting. My guess is that there's not a whole lot of available parking already on that part of Elm Street, and adding these residentials is not going to change that. Hopefully it forces these people into, you know, keeping their garages clean or clean enough to park near their vehicles in. Anyway, I'll just leave it at that at this point. Those are the three conditions that I've come up with, unless there are some additional conditions that my fellow commissioners would like to, you know, to add to my motion, and I am seeking a second on that motion.
I will second the motion as stated with the three conditions.
Any other comments that either one of you would like to make at this point before I call for a vote?
Yes, I'd just like to say that I heard the concern regarding the building height. I get that. However, according to the general plan, the maximum height is 35 feet of three stories or whichever is less. And it looks like these buildings, phase one is at 27 feet, 8 inches, and phase two is at 28 feet, 2 inches. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. But I do appreciate your concern. Thank you for sharing that. And that's all the comments I have.
Any comments or clarifications, perhaps, or
Chair Martin, I just wanted to clarify some of the wording of the three conditions as proposed.
Certainly.
So condition number one by the Planning Commission would be a perimeter fence on the north side of the project shall be installed. Condition number two, architectural features shall be included to soften the western elevation of the commercial building in phase two. And condition of approval number three, garages shall be kept clear and utilized for parking by the residents, and this restriction shall be included in all future rental agreements.
Very good. Do we need to put a, is there a height maximum on those fences or a minimum on those fences? Should we dictate it at 6 feet or, you know?
The municipal code standard is a maximum of 6 feet.
Okay. Why don't we add that on there? There's going to be a 6-foot fence. Hopefully that will address some of the issues of the neighbor and provide privacy, I think, for this particular project. If there aren't any other comments at this point, can we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
And Commissioner Montes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. This project passes 3-0. And thank you very much for coming out and speaking your mind.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, there are no non-public hearing items on tonight's agenda. We can just ask you to have your conversation outside. Thank you very much. No problem. The next item on the agenda is just the notice of administrative decisions, and I see that there was just one by Mr. Kelsey at 102 Bridge Street, a two-gate parking system at a private parking lot. Can we just get a little edification on that? Because that's a fairly... probably well-known parking lot within the community, and I think there are many of us that may assume that that is kind of a public parking lot when in fact it is not, and I might be helpful just to give some illumination on this.
Certainly. So the parking lot in question is what's commonly referred to as the Klondike parking lot. It directly serves the Olihan building at the corner of Branch Street and Bridge Street. Contrary to popular belief, it is actually a private parking lot. It's owned by that corner building. The property owner has come forward and submitted an application to install a two-gate parking system with the entrance from Branch Street and exit onto Bridge Street. So it would be one way in and out, which is a change in circulation pattern that we've looked at and determined that it is acceptable, and they have to allow for some queuing within the parking lot itself, so there will be some slight reconfiguration. It's an automated system, so the general public can still park in there, however, they will be charged for it. There will also be a validation system for anybody going to utilize and patronize one of the businesses that is also within one of the buildings that the property owner owns. So there will be the opportunity for validation and not having to pay for it. Additionally, we are trying to set up a meeting of the Downtown Parking Advisory Board to also alert them to this change in the current setup of the village parking area. But as you mentioned, it is a private parking lot, contrary to popular belief.
Very good. The only comment that I might make is that if all the traffic is exiting onto Bridge Street, there might be an opportunity to clarify or upgrade the signage at that intersection between Bridge and West Branch. There's a fair amount of illegal left turning going on there, and I would think that if people are entering that parking lot off of Branch, there's going to be a desire for them to get back onto Branch and make a left turn from Bridge Street there. So that is something that's going to need to be looked at by the city public works or engineering, whatever the department is, the appropriate one in that regard.
Yes, and we spent a considerable amount of time during processing of the application discussing, should we restrict it to right turn only, should we allow straight and right turn only, should we allow left-hand turn if somebody wants to make a right on Branch Street. So there was quite a bit of consideration given to the possibility of people making illegal left-hand turns from Bridge. We will be looking at opportunities to refresh the signage in that area to clarify no left turns.
Very good.
Chair Martin, I have a comment regarding that issue.
Sure.
I guess the issue that concerns me, since I use that parking lot frequently, and I have a dentist that uses that is located there, would be the actually the ingress to off of Branch Street, as to how much space do you have to move to get in to there before you get out of the way of the traffic.
So the plan does allow, I believe, up to two vehicles to queue at that gate, so that you can have two vehicles off the street before anybody attempting to turn into it.
And that would be two completely off the street?
Two completely off the street, yes.
Okay. All right. So I'll just plan not being the third. Thank you.
Indeed.
Excuse me. I have a question, please.
Sure.
What is the status of the bridge repair or the retrofit? Will this impact that project?
At this time, the bridge repair project will not be or will not have any impact on the parking lot going through. The bridge project itself has run a snag with one of the temporary construction easements that's needed with one of the property owners. So we've got a delay with trying to get some temporary construction easements. So the Bridge Street Bridge construction is expected in 2021. We were trying to move it to 2020, but right now it looks like it'll be 2021.
Okay. Thank you. I was going to make an awful pun, but I'll save it.
Chair Martin, can we bring our fourth member back, or has she left?
She has decided, given the light agenda, she was just going to go home.
Oh, okay. Thank
she
you.
Stepped away. So
I just didn't want to leave her out of this.
And Commissioner Maravilla is welcome back, and she informed me that she was not going to be returning tonight.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, at this point, there are some commission communications. Any comments that either my fellow commissioners would like to make at this point before we adjourn the meeting?
Not me.
None for me.
The only comment that I would like to make is kind of a general one dealing with traffic and traffic mitigation and the impact on development and projects like the one we saw tonight on traffic. And it's a general statement, and it's more kind of a hope than I think anything else. As we as commissioners and we as people in the community and as staff looks at development, whether it's a complete streets project or it is, you know, any kind of, you know, residential or commercial development, traffic is something that we live with every day. Some neighborhoods, it's already incredibly over impacted and already a detriment, you know, to the quality of life, and in others it is not so much. And without getting onto this particular project tonight, one of the needs in my mind that we as members of the community need to look at are building alternatives to jumping into our car every time we need to drive someplace. And I look at this project right there along Grand and Elm, and the Grand and Elm historically is one of the busiest intersections in town. As town has developed, the busy intersections have moved both east and west, but this remains as a major conduit for the community, and that traffic intersection is going to continue to be impacted, and all I can do is encourage people to look for alternatives when they need to go to the grocery store across the street or they want to go to a fast food restaurant, that they don't need to always jump into their car and create more traffic. And as we deal with development and what we call progress in the community, alternatives to vehicle traffic is something that's going to constantly be on our minds. Any staff communications before we adjourn tonight?
We do have one this evening. Press release went out earlier today regarding the installation of a stop sign at South Traffic or South Halcyon Road and the Pike. So that's a project that we've been working with the County of San Luis Obispo, because we only control a portion of that intersection. The county controls the other portion. And our city council and the Board of Supervisors all approved the installation of stop signs at that intersection due to the number of vehicle collisions in that area. So we are working on that. That will be going in the next few weeks to a month, and we anticipate getting the changeable message boards out on that section of roadway in the next week to alert motorists that will be happening. So I wanted to take the opportunity and let everybody know that is occurring.
That'll be a three-way stop sign intersection?
Correct.
Very good. Thank you. Any other comments from staff? I think Yes, go ahead, please.
One other one dealing with traffic is a traffic signal is currently being installed at Fair Oaks and Traffic Way as part of the Cherry development. So that is at the point right now where we're looking to, we're waiting on PG&E to energize it. Once that gets energized, that should be going active. So that's another one coming.
Excellent. As a person who goes through that intersection multiple times a day, I'm looking forward to that being signalized. With that being said, our agenda is complete tonight. This meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.